We have an interview with Ida Zalouf, and this is July 16th, 2006. And we'll start with this question. Ida, tell me what you know about your life, the life of your grandparents in Iraq, and the life of your parents. I mean, we could spend a long time on that, but maybe start with your grandparents.
My grandparents on both sides, they come from very big families, and I don't know how to say it. The families in Iraq, like the majority, were either to the top or some of them the very poor. So both of them, they come from big families that they can trace it back to hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. On my father's side, his grandfather was the chief rabbi, Chacham Ezra Dingur. So his mother is the daughter of the chief rabbi. Mm-hmm. And his father, he comes from a family who were merchants. They were very, very religious, and a lot of them are rabbis. And at the moment, they have his cousins who are four big rabbis, and they are in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. They are in Basri, one of them.
Okay.
His father used to have a place where they sell swords and army uniforms during the Turkish, the Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he passed away young, and my father, at the age of 16, had to look after his family with his brother, his sisters who were not married, and his mother. Mm. He finished school, he went to the Alliance, and he started working as the first secretary of the foreign ministry. And from there, he was very, very clever and very well educated. From there, he went to other jobs as well in the ministries of, in the commerce, in different places. Yes, it's a long list, that's right, where he worked. He was very well known among the Jews and among the Muslims, among mm-hmm. the Christian community. And he did a lot also for the Jewish community in Iraq mm-hmm. as head of the Jewish community in the last few years, which we spent there.
Right.
I remember my grandmother, both sides. Unfortunately, I remember when I was 10, they both died on the same day. My grandparents on my mother's side, my grandfather was a merchant, and I remember him very well because he passed away when I was 17. My parents married right after the story of Shafiq Adis, the hanging. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have a big wedding. My mother always told me, because it was, they were very, very scared after what happened with Adis. So they had a small wedding in her parents' garden. Mm-hmm. When I was born, obviously life was simple. One of the good things, I was born in 1953, in June. 1953, and one of the nice things which I always remember is the Hagim. Mm. And I remember always the family get together from one house to another. We always visited everybody, and this was one of the most wonderful things which I really miss. Mm. Things like Pesach, where we used to do everything at home, including the grape juice, which was, we soak mm-hmm. the raisins, and that was the grape juice we had.
How did you do it?
You soak the dried raisins after washing them, cleaning them, mm-hmm. and the water, you put it in the fridge, and it was really delicious. It was, you know, like grape juice, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is the date syrup. Mm-hmm. My grandfather used to have about, I don't know, 15, 16 palm dates in his garden. He had a massive garden. It was more like a farm than a garden.
Your paternal?
My maternal.
Your maternal.
My maternal. And they used to do the dates themselves. And we used to, wow. you know, do the dates, and they put it on the roof. And it was really wonderful to have all these things. Everything was handmade and homemade, mm-hmm. where you have a lot of help. So big houses.
Did you have servants in your home?
Servants. Mm-hmm. We had a driver. We had a gardener full time. Mm-hmm. Life was in that way easy.
Did your mother have to cook?
Yes, she had to cook. But then she didn't have to go shopping and all that. And they had a lot of help also. Mm-hmm. The Jews lived sort of more or less very near to each other.
Right.
But we were very near to my grandparents. There was one house between us. And we always went to my cousins, especially because they were more or less the same age, slightly older than us. And it was wonderful. We spent their days and they come to us. So that was very, very nice. And also once a week, every Shabbat, we used to go to my
Yeah.
father's uncle, to Tante
To
Eileen's parents.
your
We
cousins,
used to
yeah.
go. And we always met like that, especially after 67 war, where there was no telephone. So
You
the
really needed
only
to
thing,
congregate.
that's right, we needed to congregate. And the other places we congregated, apart from the houses, was the school. We went to Frank Annie School. And even in the summer, we used to go and tidy the library and do certain things and go from one house to another. That's how we met and how we were very, very close community, extremely close community. 1963, I remember I was 10, things changed, unfortunately, when they nationalized the companies. My father was the head of the managing director, sorry, of the Chevrolet and the Buick. They used to import all the American cars, all the American fridges and everything. The government took over everything. And I remember my mother said, "Dad is out of a job." And,
How
you
did
know,
that
things
feel?
became, it felt horrible because, you know, although I was only 10, we used to go there and it's a big company and everybody adored us. You know, we were
Right.
the
You were the
girls of the
hero.
boss.
Yeah.
That's right. And everybody used to give us little samples of whatever, a car, a pen, or
Right.
something. We were always running around, including one of the girls who was getting married. I remember she took me and her and my sister, who is 2 years older than me, while she went to the dressmaker while they were making her dresses
Wow.
for the wedding.
How many siblings do you have?
I've got three sisters, one older and two younger.
Okay.
So things changed when they took over,
Yeah.
you know, the government, and most of the people were without jobs. But we still carried on. We went to schools and
What did your father do in his business? What did he do with him?
he didn't. He used to write books as a writer, but he used to go mainly to help with the Jewish community in an honorary way.
Right.
Yeah, with the schools and with the,
With everything.
really with
With everything.
everything mainly. And later on, especially whenever they needed to see somebody like Saddam or anybody in the government, it was my late father with Uncle Dawood who went, and also the secretary of the community who
Right.
passed away, Naji Chechek, his name was. So things changed really a lot and we felt it. But we were so together that we had only the one problem,
Right.
which
Which
is
is
we
that
couldn't leave.
you're right.
Anybody who didn't come back after 63 obviously lost his nationality. That's including my husband because he left in 1954 to come here to a boarding school. But we still carried on, like going swimming in the summer. We could go to picnics and all that. And then quite a few of our friends left illegally through the border, through Basra
In the 60s,
in the
yeah.
60s. They used to go by boat, go to Iran, and that's it. We don't see them again anymore. After that,
What was the mood like in the 60s?
well, the early 60s were good
Right,
because
until
the Jews,
63.
especially during the time after the revolution, the Jews were still good in during the time of Qasim. But the only thing I remember, I don't remember the revolution, but I remember they had a big fire when I was five after the revolution, and down the road from where we lived, they used to have petrol tanks, and all of them exploded. And they were really scared. You could see the sky black and everything.
Wow.
And we went to my uncle's. But we enjoyed it so much because we were young and we used to
Right.
sleep, all of us,
Seemed
in the
like
roof.
fun.
For us, it was fun.
Right.
But
That was 58.
in 58,
Yeah.
yeah, just after the revolution. My sister, who's after me, she was young. My mother stayed for a while in the house, but afterwards, I don't know, Mom, I think you stayed the whole time in the house or they came afterwards.
Right.
But her parents wouldn't leave. But most of the whole street, I would say, they had to leave because they were scared in case really everything will burn.
Right.
You know, for us it was fun to be with our cousins.
Right.
That's about 58, what I remember.
What do you remember about your father helping the community in those days? Do you remember, I mean, there were many, many stories, but are there any in particular that stand out in your mind
Well,
that he always talked about in later years?
he was the head of the community.
Right.
He was put in jail during from 1st of January 69 for 2 months, for 55 days. So during the time of the hanging, he was in prison. And it was very, very scary, because I remember on that Shabbat when they came, everybody, my aunt used to live with us, everybody went with my dad to see his late uncle, you know, to her father. And there was only my mother and myself in the house. And the head of the security came, and I was at the time 14, or 14 and a half I
Oh, it must
was.
have been terrifying.
It was petrifying, really, because the moment we opened the door, they say, "Well, come and search." And I'll never forget that day. So my mother was scared also. We had to call the man who owned a little shop off the road, like a mini market kind of thing, to come in, because there was only me and her in the house. And they started searching. They looked everywhere. That was the most horrible memory that I have in my brain, even in the rubbish bin.
Was he in the house?
He was, and he brought, I don't know how many men with him, loads of men with him from the secret police. And they searched really everywhere. My father came back with his sister,
Oh, he
and
came back, so he wasn't
yeah,
there. Okay,
and he
sorry.
wasn't there with my other sisters.
Okay.
They were looking and looking, and they brought some more men till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
They couldn't finish because they were looking, even the papers from the rubbish bin, they used to put it together, the
They
pictures.
just wanted documents
They just want
and any kind of
anything.
evidence that they
That's
could
right.
use.
They took one of the pictures, which unfortunately I got it on that day from a friend of mine, and I stuck behind it a paper because I didn't want anybody to see what was written as a young girl. And they planned to do another spy connection between all the boys and girls who were in the picture from a picnic from school with my father and wipe everybody. That's what they intended to do, the Ouija Jews. So they started screaming that they're going to put me in prison. And it was very, very frightening. I was screaming so, you know, so much. I was really scared. At the end of it, my father had to shout at them and say, "Stop it, because she's really scared. Don't do that to her." So they took my father, and they said they are going to come back to finish the house to search. But obviously, in anybody's house, in any Jew, they wouldn't find anything.
Right.
There was nothing, you know.
In any case, they created
They
reasons, they
create
created
it.
evidence of
That's
what they
right.
needed for.
That's right. So they took the picture, they took my father. And we were only allowed to see him once every month on the 1st of the month. So from 1st of January, we didn't see him till the 1st of February. And I went with my sister and my mother, and we had to put a scarf on the head because we were young. And
And that's how you went out of the house, typically? You didn't normally wear a
no,
scarf,
we didn't. But
but you could.
when we went to the security,
I
because we were scared, and also because we were girls, and we were scared in those days, they didn't take the girls yet, and thank God, like they
Yeah.
didn't take me. But I remember Dad was a fraction of his size. He was so worried, obviously, he was sleeping on the floor, and a lot of people got hit on the head, on the back, got tortured, questioned. I mean, thank God he always said he wasn't tortured, but you know,
Right,
that's
but
what he said.
still he
But
was
everybody had
mentally
to sleep.
tortured at the very
Yes.
least.
Everybody had to sleep on the floor, putting his shoes under the head as a pillow, and it was floored like rocks, basically.
Did they interrogate him?
Yes, I
Yeah.
think they did.
Yeah.
They did. But every time anyone asked, you know, my mother or my father asked about the picture, they wouldn't return it. And their intention was also to take me, because someone told me afterwards, 8 months later, they were asking about me. I mean, thank God that
Wow.
whatever miracle had happened, that they didn't take me, because after that they took some girls, including some girls who were with us at school, like the
Just
Kashkouj
the
family, to prison. And some of them,
Kashkouj
the
family.
Kashkouj family were,
Weren't they the ones who were all killed?
that's right,
Right.
that's
Were
right.
they taken to prison, actually?
No,
No.
they were taken and killed, and nobody saw the family after, not even their bodies.
So Linda just told me a story about one of the sisters having left, and she asked me to ask you about it for more
Yeah.
specific details.
This one of the girls, she was in my sister's class, and she had the intention to go to school, which unfortunately she didn't. But the girl who stayed, the only girl who stayed, she left to go with her friend. So when she came back, she saw the house, you know, with blood, but there was nobody, because they intended to leave. They had their passport, tickets, and everything. And the brother of the father, you know, the uncle with his wife, she was very, very pretty. She was taken also,
She was killed.
and she was killed. And I mean, nobody knows. Nobody saw her.
Now they actually had their passports and their tickets ready to leave the
The
country
Kaskouch family,
the
yes, they
next
had
day and the next few
the
days.
next few days.
They were going to fly out. They were going to be
That's
able
right.
to get to fly out. Were they able to
I
fly out?
think in the in yes,
1971 was that?
I think I can't remember the Kaskouch, maybe 72 or
Okay.
I
Well,
cannot
there
remember
was a
exactly.
period of April 73, the
Now,
Kaskouch began
72, they gave the Jews passports, but they were very few. So, including my parents-in-law, they left in 72. But with the war starting with Israel in 73, then
Then
it
they just
wasn't
opened
allowed
up.
to go again.
It was just, they kept on opening and shutting and
That's right.
opening and shutting.
But every time they give somebody a passport, you have to go through the channels of security and police and I don't know what. Everybody has to give you permission. And then they will say you can leave. You cannot just apply for a passport and leave and go. It was a, you know, a big thing. So it was very, very frightening during those days when people were in prison, the majority, especially of the men and the boys, young boys were in prison. A lot of them were tortured, some of them were killed, the hangings of 69
How did
as
your
well.
father get out of prison?
One day they just called him and they said, "Don't you want to go out of prison?" And he said, "Yes, of course I want." But a friend of his, he wrote a poem and he said how much he loved Iraq and everything. And they showed it to one of the ministers.
Okay.
And that's how
That's how they got out.
how they got out. So for no reason, I mean, they know the Jews, they haven't got anything. But I don't know, personally, I think they put him in prison to shut him up during the time of the hanging. Because at the same time, the son of the late chief rabbi, Chacham Sason, he was in prison. But he was in prison for a year and tortured badly. So it could be, because who can open his mouth? The chief rabbi's son was in prison. My father was in prison. Everybody was petrified, really. And my father used to always open his mouth and speak.
And he continued to do so
And he continued to do so.
even when he got out of
Yes.
prison. And so what did he speak about? Tell me what he did to defend the community.
Well,
Just lots of big
times,
generalizations because he did a lot of things, but
he did a lot. I mean, he did a lot for the schools. He did a lot for the, obviously, there were a lot of trusts for the community, which they had to fight for because the government took them and they didn't release them. So they had to really work on that until they released them so that they could get money back to feed the poor and everything. Because obviously, the people who lost their jobs, it was always through the support of the community that they were able to live. I mean, whether it's food, although life was very, very cheap there, you know, compared to here. But mainly when people were in prison,
You would try to get them out.
try and get them out, especially three of them, including the chief rabbi's, he used to be like a maid, a helper with him at home, servant. He was in prison, he was tortured badly, including those three. They were in the, they call it Qasr al-Nihaya, which is the palace of the end, which used to be a royal palace, but they made it into a prison where they tortured people.
It's underneath Saddam's palace. Is that where it was, in the basement of the palace? That's how it's been described to me. No, it's not.
No, it used to be a royal palace that belonged to the king.
I see.
But afterwards, when, you know, with all the revolutions and
With
everything, with
Al-Bakr.
Bakr and everything, they made it into a prison for torture. And they called it Qasr
The whole
al-Nihaya,
thing.
the whole thing.
I see.
And people were really tortured there, whether it's noises, whether it's not letting them sleep, whether it's electrocuted them. I mean, all kinds of things. Really frightening.
And
Very,
your
very
father
frightening.
probably knew all of these stories about people who were tortured.
That's
And did he
right.
tell you? Did he come back to the
No,
family
he
and say
never did.
anything?
He
He
never
didn't want
did.
to scare you?
No, we were. He never told us about it. He never even. He was very private. He never even told us about himself. And why, when all of a sudden, because in 1973 we applied and we had permit to leave, but we never had passport. All we had to do, I mean, we had the passport, but all we had to do is literally book and get the passport, but we had the permit. And when the war started, they kept saying, "We're going to leave, we're going to leave." And every day for months on end, every day I used to scream and shout, "When are we leaving?" And they would say, "Yes, we are going to leave, but not now," because I was
Because
really scared.
they couldn't send us into
No, they
Syria?
could, but they didn't get the ticket.
Right.
And when the war broke out with Israel in 1973, so obviously it wasn't allowed to leave anymore.
Right. Okay.
And every Saturday morning, my parents and Tante Aline and a couple of other families, they used to get together
Right.
and just speak and all that. And an elderly woman who was sitting there, you know, Lisette, she was grandmother.
Yes.
She asked my late father, "What happened to the passport? Is it really not allowed to leave?" And they said, "Shh, don't tell anybody, don't tell anybody, but don't tell Ida."
Right.
I wasn't allowed
Oh.
to hear that. So that same day, I used to have, I remember the next day, I had a big exam at university. I was at university. And
Oh, so you were able to be in university then.
only in my year, not the ones before.
Well, okay.
So they said, "Don't tell Ida." When they came back, I screamed so much and I said, "When are we going to leave?" And they said, "That's it, we cannot leave." That day, I felt, well, there was no point in living really anymore. I remember crying till 4 o'clock in the morning, and I said, "That's the end of my life, you know, we are not going to leave."
But did you feel that the community was just
The
ethnic?
community was probably 250 people in those days.
Yeah.
Most of them left, the majority left.
Right. So all your friends had left, or most of them.
Everybody left.
Yeah.
We were a class of 30 when we finished school in 1971, and 29 left. I was the only one there. So I
Did
was
your
petrified.
father probably felt an obligation to the Jews who were remaining to stay
Yes,
there?
probably. He
Yeah.
didn't want to leave like that. But fortunately enough, while they went to one of those government places,
Yeah.
and the secretary of the community was standing next to him and overlooking at someone writing in the typewriter a secret message that my father is involved with Zionism. So he turned around and he said to him, "This is meant to be secret, you know, you
Right.
cannot see it." So he told my father, and I remember him as if it's happening now. He came in standing at the kitchen door and he told my mother, "Tuesday we are leaving." And my mother said, "No, next week or something." And we stayed a week, we literally packed everything, and it was Sukkot. And one of the Muslim girls at university with me, she decided she is going to come because it was the festival of Sukkot. We had to cover, I remember, all the bags with tablecloths and everything so that they do not know. Although I had a passport, but I was petrified in case they realize that I'm leaving. And we left. And when we left, everybody came to my house, you know, about five, six people from the group which I was within.
To say goodbye to
And
you.
no, they didn't know. They came to look for me where I was because I had to pretend I was ill and I returned home.
Okay.
And the reason I found out about that, because after my father passed away, one of the girls who was with me, we were two girls in the mechanical section of the engineering, which I was doing, she read the articles in the newspaper. So she rang her brother, and they got my parents' number, and they got my number to ring me. And she said, "For 31 years, she's been looking for me. She had to leave Iraq, and she is now in Sweden." And I said to her, "What happened when I left?" And she said, "We immediately went to the house, and the neighbors came out, and they were crying, and we started crying because you left, and they told us you left with your luggage."
And when did she leave eventually?
She left in, I think, 10 years ago. No, in 90, 15 years ago. But she got married to one of the Kurds who was with us in the same class, and they lived for 10 years or something in Kurdistan. They were communists.
Okay.
So they were
You're
going to be
Muslim.
hanged. No, they're
Oh,
Muslims.
they're Muslims. Okay.
Yeah, they were going to be hanged, so they had to leave and go to Sweden.
I see. Okay.
So it's a different
So you
story
had
with
plenty
her.
of Muslim and Christian friends? Or.
We had plenty, especially my father had.
Right.
But unfortunately, when it came to the crunch and he was in prison, they didn't want to help.
Right.
Either they were scared, or some
Right.
of them didn't want to know. But the ones who were scared, they didn't want to be involved with Jews. But he had a lot of Muslims friends. And going back to the story of the university, in 1967, it changed our lives completely. Because we used to go to belong to the club where we used to go swimming. 1967, telephone lines were cut. Jews were excluded from all clubs, from universities, from literally everything.
Right.
And my older sister, she did the government exam, the baccalaureate, in 1967. They attacked them on the first day of the exam. So the Jews, everybody ran away. They couldn't care less about the exam because they were scared. While one Muslim girl, she wanted to do the exam because she wanted to be a doctor after, and she was in our school, and they hit her because they thought she was Jewish and she wouldn't let go of her paper. So they had to hit her. But eventually she finished them, she became a doctor.
So that was in 1967.
67.
There were demonstrations
There was
outside.
demonstrations. It was really horrible because we were excluded from everything.
Dad was in prison.